Throughout all of history, they've only talked about the fame, never the hard work, never the elbow grease, never the early call time.
Howdy, howdy. It's 10 minutes with Andrew and JJ.
Wrong podcast.
Here we are,
dude.
At the Burbank studio.
What? Wrong podcast.
Oh, what is
that? Was our old podcast.
Oh, what are we doing here?
Early call time.
I just woke up. This was a dream. Bob Newhart was in the bed next to me.
It's just like the television show.
Oh. Oh, so this is early call time.
This is early call time.
Oh.
Today, Nadav can't make it with make the podcast today. Oh. So,
well, it's a holiday.
We've got another guest.
We do.
How do you pronounce your name? Nadav?
Nadav. It's good.
Oh, okay. All right.
Oh.
It's a rough one, guys.
Huh.
You can call me by my Starbucks name, Josh.
Josh. Oh. All right.
And you are a stunt woman.
Yep. You know,
right. Josh is actually
injuries that female athletes do get. Doctors have told me that I do. So
how's that a possibility?
Well, you know, I did this in high school. I was in a mosh pit, and I guess I was just jumping up and down too vigorously.
And your vagina got injured.
Well, my knee popped out, and I went to the doctor, and he had it checked out. Well, the doctor checked out, and he's like, you know, this is bizarre. This is an injury we see most common in female runners.
Oh.
I was like, oh, well,
weird.
I don't do either of those. I don't do females or running.
Wait, what concert was it?
It was high school. It was a complicated time.
Was it a ska concert?
I was going to say.
It was actually a battle of the bands. Jordan, one of your guys' last guests, one of his bands.
Well, should we just let everybody in on it?
No, because I think your shitty third host had better things to do.
Well, Josh, I'm sorry.
He, I think I saw his Twitter or something. He was like, yeah, I'm going to go be a guest on some shitty podcast. It's like, God, that is just horrible advertising on all platforms.
Yeah.
Josh, you're an assistant
editor.
Just
call editor. Me Nadav. I'm Nadav.
Okay. Nadav.
It's hard.
It is.
Nadav.
When people ask me, how do you pronounce Nadav?
Or
how am I going to remember that?
Right.
If I feel really stupid that day, I'll say, it rhymes with improv. And you could just call me Improv Nadav.
Oh, that's nice.
But then whenever I get to the end of that sentence, I feel like an idiot because it just sounds stupid.
It does.
But usually my answer is, you could just call me whatever you could pronounce, which is also usually a mistake.
Okay.
Because one time someone called me Adolf.
Adolf?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Which of all names to be mispronounced
Adolf
as.
Adolf Itzkowitz. Hmm.
Right? Those two names don't go together.
Doesn't make any sense.
That name was just ruined, you know?
Adolf?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just like the mustache, just ruined.
Yeah, back when I had a stint in stand-up, I had a couple bits on how fucked up my name was. I use it as a pickup line. I'm like, I have a horrible name, but, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I have a brother who doesn't.
Yeah.
What's your brother's name?
David.
Oh.
Or David.
He's the only one that got out alive. I have two sisters, Michal, Yael. It's rough.
Is he
it's
the youngest of everyone?
Father
I'm the youngest.
Israel.
Oh. What?
Yeah.
So did they, like, take a break, and then they were like, we got to get back into it.
No. It was every 2 years they had a new kid.
But how does David?
David's the second kid, and they're like, let's give him a break.
King of Israel, man.
And then they're like, you know what? He has such an easy name. Let's just give the next two really fucked up names. And so that's what they did, and that's
why Yael, is that one of them?
Yael, yeah.
Yeah, I have a friend named Yael.
Really?
Yep, up in Seattle.
That's crazy.
I used to work with her.
There's not a lot of Yaels.
Nope.
I've never met a Nadav in America.
Yeah.
Actually, our friend Chris one time accidentally sent me an email for a Nadav that he works with, who is also an assistant editor.
Weird.
Yeah, I feel like I felt
mind blown.
I was in an alternate universe.
Yeah.
So how did you make the transition from stunt woman to assistant editor? Let's talk about that in
graphic detail.
Well,
it started with me taking my hormone medication.
Good one.
Thanks.
That was a good one.
Well, okay. Thanks for being on the show.
Well, there's the door.
Thank you.
How did you become an assistant editor, and what does an assistant editor do?
Oh, boy, getting right to the good questions.
Yeah, you know, that's what I do.
So, how I became an assistant editor. Well, I first got into editing. I said this a little bit on the Brian Freeman podcast, but he's literally the reason why I started editing.
Right.
He had an iMac computer, and we had filmed something, and it came with iMovie. It was stocked with iMovie. We filmed some stupid, this really stupid Terminator movie starring me, where I'm just killing all of our friends. And he was just like sitting on the footage. And I was like, hey, Brian, you work on that yet? You work on that video? He's like, yeah, man, I'll work on it tonight. And like, it was just like that for a couple days. And I was like, hey, man, why don't I come over this weekend and you teach me how to use iMovie? And then I fucking fixed that bottleneck and, now I edit.
Right. Fair enough. Well, that's an editor.
But how assistant editor.
Yes.
Well, because, you know, you got to crawl before you could walk. No one starts at being an editor. I mean, some people do.
Some do, yeah.
Really? I didn't know that.
I kind of did.
Oh, yeah, huh? You never, you,
I never really went the formal route of anything.
Right.
But that's, we're not here to talk about me.
Right, that's a different episode.
Yes.
Actually, I think we already filmed that episode, or we did that episode.
Well, sort of.
We'll release it later.
Called an intro episode.
Oh, yeah. Anyway.
But, okay, so assistant editor.
Yeah, because an assistant editor has different kind of responsibilities than an editor.
Right, so an assistant editor is pretty much there so that the editor doesn't have to deal with any of the headaches that it takes to actually set up a project before he could start editing it. Like, because, you know, as you know, an editor, he goes, oh, well, here's a clip. That was a good take. I'll use this. Or, hey, that, you know, that was a good wild line. I'll use that. Before it even gets to that stage, it needs to get synced. It needs to get transcoded into whatever format that, for some reason, the camera didn't already shoot onto. And, you know, there's all this other prep that needs to be done, too. Like, I've had a process where the editor wanted all the scripty notes inputted into Final Cut.
Oh, really?
So I had to copy and paste everything into the log note section, comment A, comment B, master comment. Like, all of those columns were filled. I had to mark all the takes. I had to mark all the actions. Because you notice that every single time that you need to find something, that takes an extra second to 5 seconds to actually do, and you're doing that for every single thing, that adds up over time.
Right.
So when you have your assistant editor come in, he takes care of all of that shit, so all you could really worry about is creative stuff. Because I don't know if I've noticed this because I've been starting to, like, you know, film some sketches and stuff of mine. Mm-hmm. And naturally, since I know how to edit and I know how to assistant edit, I've been just doing all the post-production stuff myself.
Right.
And I've noticed why it's so important now to have an assistant editor is because the assistant editor is pretty much there to get burned out on the footage. Because the more you look at footage, the more burned out and the less objective you are towards it. Because only when you see it on a first viewing, you're like, oh, that was a good take.
Right.
But if you see the same clip 20 times in a row, you're going to be like, oh, that's this clip. It's not, oh, there's that good clip. It's there's this clip.
Yeah.
And so
that makes sense.
So an editor, I feel like, can't watch the footage before he starts working on it to the point where he can't make that difference between it anymore.
Yeah. Well, being an editor and an assistant in the past as well, it is all about first impressions.
Yeah.
Everything is all about first impressions. And a lot of times when producers or directors watch something multiple times, they pick up on different things that they wouldn't have caught the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's annoying.
And well, yeah. And it's kind of a weird dynamic now because a lot of people like to review and like to watch things multiple. Like, you know, you're watching a television show, you like to maybe watch it twice. Like, I'll watch The Walking Dead twice because I really like the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like TV is being catered more to that than it was in the past, where you would watch it once and you'd watch it and go, oh, cool, that was a great episode, but you didn't have the access to watch it again. Like, let's say Cheers back in the right. 80s, before you had a VCR, well, before people would record it on a VCR, something like that.
That was back when, like, viewing parties were probably bigger, too. Like, hey, we're all going over to Jeff's to go watch Cheers.
Right.
You know, like, people still do that now, but it's only for shows that deserve, like, a live viewing. Like, you know, Walking Dead, Breaking Bad.
Right. Like, but with that first viewing, like, it's just an interesting dynamic.
I feel like the first viewing, like, the way that I watch movies is, the first viewing is always like, I'm not looking at it as an assistant editor. I'm not looking at it as a person in the, you know, in the industry. I'm viewing it as an audience member.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not trying to look for mistakes. I'm not trying to look for, you know, continuity errors. I'm literally just trying to enjoy the story.
Right.
And so, you know, if it's something that I really liked and, you know, so like Birdman, for example, Have you guys seen Birdman
yet? I haven't.
Holy shit. Go see Birdman. Just, if that doesn't sweep for cinematography, I'd be very surprised. It's one of the most beautiful films I've seen, like, this year. And, you see it on the first viewing, you're just like, holy shit, they did something really fucking amazing here. And then, you know, you go see it again, and, you start picking up on all these other things, like,
sure, oh, okay, where they that's a little did weird. The cut points and things
exactly.
like that.
Exactly. Yeah. So there's things like that where it's, you know, I don't try and look at it with like a mm-hmm. you know, pick and comb, or I don't know the expression.
Fine tooth comb. Yeah. Yep.
I'm not trying to go through it with a fine tooth comb, you know, on the first viewing. First viewing, I'm just trying to enjoy it. Actually, I remember specifically there was a couple times where I was watching stuff with you, JJ.
Mm-hmm.
This was back when I was interning for you at LXTV.
Mm-hmm.
I think this was maybe even the first time we had hung out outside of the office. You invited me over to your place. I forget what we were watching. Like I came over specifically to watch something, maybe a movie, maybe a show. I forget. But we're watching this. And I just see you going through. You're like, oh, that was a 5-frame dissolve. That was a 7-frame dissolve. And I was just it was like,
probably like House Hunters or some shit.
Yeah, I think it was. It was probably.
You want to come over and watch thing. House Hunters?
Yeah, I don't know.
And so it was. Just, and I remember just going through my head. I was just like, oh, JJ, what a tortured soul. He can't even enjoy things anymore.
Mm. Well, that's. I think that we still like Kelly pointed this out one of the first times after we.
Kelly
hung out,
is who?
My girlfriend.
Yes.
And it was after we. We were just starting to hang out, but she came over and watched TV with the both of us. And afterwards, she pointed out, like, you guys watch TV differently than I do. Like, because we comment on different, like, mm-hmm. it was a weird act out and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And, yeah. like, I feel the same way about watching magicians perform because do you want to hold for that plane?
No, we don't need a hold. Guys, this is... Fuck it, we're doing
this
it live.
This is production.
I'm not dubbing anything.
I'm not coming back for ADRs, man.
All right.
But no, it's like I'll watch magicians perform. It's the same thing. I can't. It's very hard for me to sit there and just enjoy an act. I'm looking at like mm-hmm. routining and how they're doing, and I'm like, oh, they're gonna go in this direction with it because you've seen it a million times. So
yeah, right. You're looking.
But
for
are you able? You're able to sort of turn that off and just watch.
For the first time, I am able to turn it off. Unless like someone sends me something and wants me to give them notes on it. That's really the only time on the first viewing I'm actually paying attention to like stuff that I would do differently.
I'm jealous.
Normally I don't. I'm the same way. I can like if it's something that I really want to enjoy, mm-hmm. I'll sit and enjoy it. But if it's something like I don't know, like any kind of crappy, well, not crappy, any kind of like romantic comedy that Andrew might enjoy. But I'll sit and watch it with him.
Yeah, it's one thing.
I'll be like, oh, they could have done this differently.
It's one thing if you're putting in lip service and you're watching something just because someone that you're with wants to watch it.
Right.
But when you're watching something that you actually are like, oh, I'm going to watch Fox Hunter tonight and I'm going to fucking enjoy it. Or Foxcatcher. I'm going to mm-hmm. watch Foxcatcher yeah. tonight. Like, I'm not looking for how long the long cuts are. Like, sure. I'm not looking for, you know.
You want to enjoy the story.
Exactly. I just like, you know, you hear amazing things about it, so I just want to enjoy the amazingness of it. Now, I can't say the same for Gone Girl. I don't know. I don't know what it was about it. I'm the only one that I know that didn't like it.
I never watched it.
I haven't seen it, but everybody I've talked to is obsessed with it.
Everyone fucking loves it, and I can't understand why. It's because, you know, good, this ties into me being an assistant editor, too.
Okay.
So, okay, this is going to be a little bit long version of why I didn't like Gone Girl. So, I started off...
Wait, are you going to give any spoilers?
This is going to be like a half hour story.
Oh. Oh, I'm going to take off.
But I probably will. Okay, so I started off as an assistant editor. So I'd finished college. God, okay, we're going back to the roots. I'd finished mm-hmm. college, and on my last year of college, I started working for this company based in Orange County. Excuse me.
Orange County. Yep.
I still have a lingering cough.
It's okay, buddy.
I worked for this company in Orange County. Eventually, you know, I started off as an editor and I started running the video department, but I had no idea what the hell I was doing. I was like, is this how you're supposed to run a video department? Like, we had no type of backups. Like, we literally had 3 hard drives that were each like maybe a terabyte, and I'm just cycling them around through editors. And it's like, if that goes missing, like, it's gone.
Right.
And like, I just like, I knew that I was just one minor, like, I knew that any day there was going to be something that happened where it was like, well, Nadav, this is a fire that you can't put out by yourself. Right. In fact, No one could put this. This is an oil fire. You need to let this just burn out. You just need to let it burn itself out.
Yeah.
And I knew that day was coming. And I was like, I need to quit before that day comes. And so I was working there for like 2 years. And eventually I was like, you know what? Like, I'm working in Orange County. I'm working on stuff that no one sees. And not only that, I'm embarrassed to talk about this. Like, yeah, I'm running a video department, but I know this isn't how it's done. Like, if someone that was in my position in a different company heard how I was running this, they'd be like, are you a fucking idiot? Are you dumb? Like, who taught you this? And it's like, you know, no one taught me. I just tried figuring it out on my own. I was like, I'm never going to do it right if I just do it by myself.
Yeah.
So I decided to quit. I was born and raised in LA. So I decided to quit. I decided to move back in with my parents and just try and rebuild from ground zero. And I just started taking any jobs because I knew I was in my safety net. Like, I knew I didn't need to make a living until I moved out of my parents' house. So I just started taking every single job that I could. Remember, the first gig that I got actually was that Palos Verdes job that I DIT'd on that you got me on.
Right.
And I remember first, like, at first I was like, look, JJ, I know this is like a month or two worth of work, but, you know, tell these guys they don't need to pay me. Like, I just want experience. I just need to do real stuff. I need to be around people that do real things. And you're like, there's no fucking way you're doing this for free. This is way too much work. Like, don't worry, you won't get paid much, but you're not doing this for free. So I worked there for 2 months.
Gosh, it was 2 months.
That's nuts. No, actually, it was a, I think it was a 25-day shoot. So a month and a half of shooting and then plus reshoots. And then, you know, and I just saw that project as like, all right, this is what I could use to, you know, start developing my skill set, like, and actually apply it to real things. Not do things in the process where I was doing them in Orange County, but do them in the way that they're actually supposed to do. And, you know, JJ, you were my beacon. I was like, JJ knows how to do this shit. Just fucking do exactly what he says, and then you'll know how to do that shit.
Right.
And you knew that that was my mentality towards it. So anytime you were doing some sort of process, you, you know, we were neighbors at the time. We were literally,
like 2 minutes away.
Yeah. Granted, we could have walked to each other's houses.
And
but
I did.
But let's just say that when I drove to your house, I couldn't even listen to one song. That's how close we were.
Yeah, that's true.
So, so whenever you had a, something that you were going to work on and you're like, hey, Nadav doesn't know how to do this. Let's invite him over. You called me up. I came over. We worked on it. We ended up doing that like 5 days a week for about 6 months, whether it be like editing recaps, prepping for color, prepping for sound, doing turnout, like just all of it. And it, like, it felt like a boot camp for me, and I loved doing it because I was like, holy shit, like this is great. This is how people do it.
Right.
So after that, there was another assistant editor that worked on that show that was also doing work on Lifetime movies. And so she had gotten upgraded to, I think, Shaws of Sunset. This was before the strike. And so she worked on Shaws of Sunset, and she needed someone to replace her on all these Lifetime movies. So I started working on those, and I started, I thought, you know, I don't watch Lifetime movies, but I do like watching bad movies. And that's what these movies were. They were bad. And I really enjoyed watching the footage that came in daily because, you know, if it was like a murder scene, it was some over-the-top murder scene that's just like, you know, for and this joke has been made so many times, but for a channel that's for women, women sure do get raped, beaten, and murdered almost all and I'm every sorry, that's fucking funny, movie in that movie on that channel.
No, it's true.
And so, I mean, for the first initial movie, at least, or the first two movies that I did with them, I did this thing where I refused to read the script beforehand so I could just watch. Probably shouldn't admit that.
Yeah, that's not good.
But I didn't read the script. Let's just say the first movie. I didn't read the script for the first movie so that when the dailies came in, I could just, like, watch it and be taken aback, like, by surprise for the first time. And this shit was next level ridiculous. So, like, and I start noticing all these common notes and themes. And it's like, oh, well, first you need to set up this beautiful family. Then you need to fucking, you know, set up this beautiful thing. And then you need to start showing it all start slowly crashing down. And so when I watched Gone Girl, here we go, we're looping it back.
Oh, there we are.
So when I watched Gone Girl, I'm literally seeing it hit the exact same notes that all of these Lifetime movies hit. And immediately it just, like, muscle memory kicked back. And I was like, fuck this. I hate this movie. This is everything that's wrong. And I just couldn't get out of that mentality right from the get-go. And
really?
It was like, it was rough. And I told, I went out. I went out.
Oh, did you see that?
Yeah. Oh, that was good. You caught that cough right
thank
on guard.
Thank you. Thank you.
So I went out and I started talking to people, like, and some of them hadn't seen it. And so I was like,
yeah.
Do yourself a favor, don't see it. I was telling people not to watch it. And then, like, I go around looking for people that also didn't like it, and I couldn't find one.
It's very similar to that big robot movie with the Juggernauts. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I saw it with you.
Yeah, and we were like, why
is it called Riptide?
No, Pacific Rim.
Yeah, Charlie Hunnam was in it too.
Yeah, we're like, oh man, this movie sucks ass. And then everyone else was like, this is the best movie ever.
And it's like, Guillermo del Toro, man, what are you doing, bud?
I thought I was like, did I see this wrong?
Was it Guillermo del Toro that did it?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, and not only, did you know that they're doing a sequel to that?
Yeah.
It's like,
well,
what?
Because it did so well.
Yeah, great.
I'm not going to go see it. Fuck that.
It's like, it's just, I don't know, man. Like, I have the same mentality towards Marvel movies. Like, they're all just the same to me now. Like, I have this rule where if there's a movie out that I really have no intention of seeing, the only thing that will make me see it is if I don't see a single bad review come back from anyone that, like, I trust their taste. So the only reason I really went to go see Guardians of the Galaxy was because everyone's like, this is the best Marvel movie so far.
It was very good.
And I went and watched it. I was like, you know, this is pretty good.
Yeah.
But I still have that mentality on Marvel movies where I just don't like franchises. I don't like movies that were made because someone thought, oh, this will make a lot of money. This has a built-in audience. Why not? We don't even have to work at making this good.
Right, right.
And so when a studio comes at a movie with that type of mentality, and it's pretty obvious when they do, I just automatically just tune out.
Did you watch Interstellar?
I did.
I really enjoyed that movie, and I won't talk about it because I want people to have the same experience I did. I didn't see any of the trailers.
Trailers are the worst thing to watch if you're interested in seeing a movie because it gives away all the most important things. That it's just like, here's the movie.
Yeah,
in 2 minutes.
Sure. And well, we talked about that
with Ben.
Yeah. Right. But I didn't watch any of the trailers. I made sure that if I saw anything with Matthew McConaughey for like the last 2 months, I was like, I got to turn it off, even if it was a Lincoln commercial. And so
Lincoln.
But I had nothing going into it. And it was by far one of the greatest experiences, movie experiences that I've seen.
Because, you know, I was on Reddit and I was starting to see like a behind the scenes before I'd even seen the movie. And the first thing they said was like, oh, yeah, you know, we don't use any green screen. Like, it's all practical effects. And the second they said that, I was like, you know what? That's all I need to know. And I pressed pause and I was like, I could watch this once the movie's over.
They did those.
It's all practical effects. And they had an executive producer was like a physicist that is an expert on black holes. So all this shit looks pretty much how it would look so far, like according to formulas. And not only that, but this physicist that good call, dude. But this physicist that worked on it, like after seeing the visualization of what it would look like to be next to a black hole, he's like, oh, you know what? Eureka. Like he had a eureka moment and he like discovered like a couple more things about black holes by working on this movie.
Oh, wow. That's pretty cool.
You know what? I will dare to say this, though. Maybe it was just because they were around. They were released within a year of each other. But I'm going to say that Gravity was better than Interstellar. I'm going to say that I enjoyed myself in Gravity more than Interstellar.
Oh, really? I would say quite the opposite.
Yeah, you didn't like Gravity?
I would say Interstellar is one of my top five movies.
Of all time?
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. Yeah, it was good. Like, I liked it. It's just the like, when you first see something, and it, like, it's... You know that marketing concept where it's like, you don't have to be the best, you just have to be first?
Sure.
I feel like that's why Gravity has me. Because it was the first, like, next level space movie that came out. It was just like, this is ridiculous.
Right.
This is, like, how space is. This is, like, very, like, they created new machinery to film that movie. They created new equipment. Like, they created a new robo arm that, like, works in zero G and...
It's pretty sweet.
Yeah, so,
Oh, hey, Andrew.
Hey, I just watched Gone Girl. Fucking fantastic.
Oh, yeah?
Nadav, your thoughts?
You know, I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan.
Oh, boy.
What are you guys talking about?
You know, Andrew, you don't say much, but when you do...
It's good.
You really just...
It's good. It's disappointing.
You just see the rabbit wheel or the mouse wheel just going, and... yeah, it's great. Well, let's get back on topic and talk about
Stuntwoman.
Assistant Go. Editor stuff. What would you say would be the best advice that you could give someone that wants to be an assistant editor or even farther as an editor?
Well, you see, it's hard for me to give advice because I don't feel like I'm at a point in my career where I'd consider myself successful.
Okay.
I feel.
Let me state this. Right. Let me state this another way.
Okay.
What mistakes have you made that, if you wouldn't have made them, would make your career better, or that you can say, "Hey, don't make this mistake because XYZ."
You know what I would say is I would say, and you know, I've learned this in mistakes that I've made, not just in my post-production career, but I've made these mistakes in my life in general, which is don't burn bridges.
Oh,
you never know who the person is going to be that's going to take you out of rock bottom. You never know who's going to be that person that hands you that silver platter job. That's like,
right. Hey,
here's that gig that you wanted that's going to get you notoriety, and then all these other people will see you, and then they'll all just give you work because they know you were so great on this one project.
Mm-hmm.
So you never know who that gig is going to come from. Damn, you're so good on that.
Oh, I can anticipate it.
So, yeah, I'm trying to, like, take a deep breath.
It's the big...
So, you never know who that job's... Like, I just saw... Is it Keegan-Michael Key or is it Michael Keegan-Key?
I think it's Key.
Keegan-Michael Key.
So I just saw this Keegan-Michael Key video on clip on YouTube where he's talking to like a group of acting students.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, you know, what's the best advice that you could give us? And his only thing was like network, 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 network. Because exactly what I just said,
mm-hmm.
you never know where that gig is going to come from that's going to like make you not have to worry about paying bills anymore.
Right.
Cause he said like he got called up by one of his buddies to go do the show, and he was one of the first people on the show. So he was in the room while they're casting it.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, not a single audition was held. They were just like, oh, you know, this person, he'd be great for this part. You know, that person, he'd be great for this part.
Yeah.
It's all, you know, who do you know? Like, because people don't want to work hard to fucking find, you know, the perfect fit. If they know someone that they already know could do the job well, they're not going to go out do an open casting call. They're just going to be like, that person could do it. Get him in here.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that just shows don't burn any bridges. Always go out and meet people. Never say no. If there's something that you think you know how to do but not expertly, just be honest about it. Be like, look, I really want to do this. I think I could do this.
Mm-hmm.
I've never done it before, but, you know, I've been researched. Like, I know, I'm confident I know I can do it. I just want you to know that, but let me do this.
Yeah, and that's good advice. I mean, I know that in the past, transparency has really gotten, you know, it's gotten me work and it hasn't gotten me work.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
But the thing is, I was honest, and it's not like I was, like, there's two situations in that scenario. There's... You lie and say, oh, yeah, I got this. Mm-hmm. And then you mess up the production down the line.
And then you'll never get work again.
Exactly. Or you say, well, you know what? I'm not really familiar with it, but I'll try. And they may not go with you, but they'll remember you.
Right.
Then you can go to them later and say, hey, I can do that now, or whatever the case may be. And then you can get work. And I think something like that has happened in your case before, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. I don't know if we're thinking about the same thing, but like where that exactly, where honesty like really helped me out. Granted, it didn't get me the job, but, I went out for, an interview at Photochem, and, like they were asking me what I know, what my skill set was. In fact, you know, this is actually a good story to tell too for people that want to be an assistant editor.
Perfect.
So I was freelancing. You know, I moved back to LA, you know, with my parents. I was freelancing for 2 years. Every job I got was super shitty, like not like didn't pay enough for me to live off of. And so, you know, for, you know, a couple of times I was doubting myself. I was like, is this the right thing for me to be doing? Like, I have this friend that I went to college with. He's in real estate. Numerous times he's told me, hey, Nadav, if you ever want like a stable job in real estate, you got it with me, buddy.
Hmm.
There was once or twice where I seriously considered, I was like, should I, you know, just quit this headache while I'm ahead and do real estate and, you know, get real money, like, get, you know,
oh, it's
fat,
tempting.
Fat stacks, like, super quick.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, because I'm not going to respect that decision down, like, sure, I'll get money now, but like in 2 years, I'm gonna be just as unhappy as I was in Orange County, mm-hmm. you know, not doing real work.
Right.
So
the stuff that you wanted to do.
Exactly. Right. So every now and then I would just get freaked out and be like, holy shit, I'm still freelancing after 2 years, not making good money. I need to get off my ass. And so there was a couple things that I did. The first time that I got that feeling where I need to get off my ass, I went on Reddit. And Reddit is such an underutilized source. I feel like a lot of people use that site for entertainment, but you could use that as a tool in your toolbox. Like, there's a whole bunch of subreddits. If you're in the industry, there's a subreddit for the job that you do, whether it's in After Effects, editing, you know, film industry, LA. And, you know, so I just went on, you know, the editor's subreddit, and I just posted. I was like, hey, guys, I'm looking for stable work in post-production. I know this, this, and this. How do I get a job in a post house?
Yeah.
And all these people started replying with really good suggestions. And some of them were like, hey, send me a PM, you know, send me a private message. Send me this, send me that. And, you know, a couple of those people I'm still in contact with because they gave great advice. And, you know, one of them actually still gets me work every now and then.
Oh, that's awesome.
Like, I've worked on a couple of, like, History Channel commercials.
Is that the guy that worked in Santa Monica or works in Santa Monica?
He's also a freelancer. Like, he's done downtown. When I worked for Roger, that production company.
Oh, okay.
Like, he does a lot of commercial spots. Like, I did, a Obamacare commercial, like, through him. And, like, he's literally just a stranger I met on the internet that, like, saw my post. He's like, oh, well, this kid's trying. He just, like, needs help. Like, everyone needs help.
Sure.
And so all you could really do is just try and find those people that – because the way he came at me, he's like, you know, I'm where I'm at because people helped me. There's no way I could have gotten here without help.
Right.
So when I see someone that I could help, I try to because no one's going to get to where they want. Like, no one's a threat, you know?
Yep.
Like, you're good. I'm good. Like, everyone could be good on their own.
Yeah.
So I got that. So, you know, I did posts on Reddit and stuff, and that, you know, I was able to, you know, pick some fruit off of that, which was nice. And then another time, like, I started getting, like, really stressed out. This was maybe, like, six months apart from each other. You know, someone said, you know, just go around to all the post houses. You know, he's like, where do you live? Burbank? Dude, that's, like, where all the post-production houses are.
Yeah.
Just literally go online, look at all the post-production offices, put on a button-down shirt, print out your resume on nice paper and just drop it off everywhere that, you know, the door is unlocked.
Yeah.
And that's what I did. I spent 2 days driving around Burbank, dropped it off at maybe like 20 different post-production houses. Some of them were mom and pop shops. Some of them were gigantic. And the last place I went to go drop it off at was Photochem. And I walk in and I'm like, hey, who's the person that does the hiring? And it's like this lady at a reception desk. And she's like, oh, he works upstairs, and there's no way you're talking to him right now. Like,
right.
Okay, is there any way I could leave my resume? Like, can you make sure it gets to them?
Yeah.
They go, yeah, you can leave your resume, but here's an application. Why don't you fill it out, bring it back? And I was like, oh, fill out an application. There's no way I'm getting this shit.
Right.
But I'm like, you know what? Whatever. I'll kid myself. I fill it out, and then the next day when I'm dropping off more resumes, I go, and I'm like, you know what? I'll drop off this application, too. Why not? And I thought that was the most long – like, I almost didn't do it because I was like, there's no way I'm – like, there's out of all – everything that I dropped off – Photochem is calling me last.
Right.
And
I know the feeling.
And it was very unfruitful, you know? Like, I spent 2 full days just driving around, dropping off my resume, and, you know, for 6 months, nothing happened. I was still getting my freelance gigs from, you know, the contacts I was, you know, had before. And 6 months later, I get a call from a number I don't know, and she goes, you know, hey, this is so-and-so. I'm calling from Photochem. I'm looking through your application. You know, this never happens. But I was going through applications and, you know, you seem like you're qualified. You want to come in?
Wow.
And I was like,
that's great.
What?
I was like, what? You guys don't know people that want this job? Like, what? And then, you know, as soon as I realized it was too good to be true, I was like, you know what? This is where my honesty, like, I need to be honest because I'm going to fall flat on my face if I'm not.
Right.
So I told her, yes, I will come in for an interview, but I need to tell you right now, I don't know Avid. I'm really good at Final Cut. I know all this stuff. I know how to use this program, that program, this program, that program. I know how to do all this stuff, but I'm just not where I need to be yet in Avid. And she goes, you know what? That's okay. You know, we have our own programs here. We'll train you. We'll teach you, whatever. It'll be fine. At least come in for the interview. And I was like, holy shit. I just said I don't know Avid at a giant production house, at a post-production house, and they still want to talk to me.
Right.
Pretty amazing. So I went in. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah. Like,
so I go in for the interview. And I always do really well in interviews. I just be my, like, I'm talking right now. I'm just myself. I'm honest. Like, I'm like, oh, I don't know that. Oh, that's cool. Don't like this guy.
Yeah.
And they're like, and they're like, you know, and you know, it's funny. They ask me questions a lot. Like we ask our guests on this podcast. They're like, so what do you want to do? You know, like those kinds of questions. And, you know, I give some bullshit answer.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay. And, you know, is there anything, we'll get to the end of it. I was like, they're like, is there anything that you think we should know? I was like, well, and there was a 2-person interview. Like there was 2 people interviewing me. I was like, well, you know, I already told her like on the phone But in case you didn't relay the message to you, I need to tell you too, I don't know Avid that well. Like, I'm literally, like, yeah. I feel like it's the one thing that would, like, that makes me look shitty.
Right.
And so I was like, they need to know this before they invest in me and actually have me on the job. Because it's, especially things like post-production, like, it's all very technical. And if you lie about it, they're going to find out literally minute one that you were lying. Like, yeah. They're going to be like, hey, can you do this? And you're like, oh, I don't know how to do that. They're like, uh-huh. Okay. Well, see, don't come in tomorrow.
Yeah.
And don't come in ever, because we never want to work with liars. And, you know, it's and so, you know, I said that at the end of the interview, like, you know, I don't know Avid. And, like, they kind of smiled, and they're like, oh, you know, that's okay. We have our own programs. But, you know, thanks for being honest. Like, that's really good on you. I was like, oh, no problem. Walk out. Don't expect, you know, mm-hmm. that's the last time I'll ever hear from them. They call me back for a callback interview.
And I remember you
and they're like,
calling me about that.
Yeah. And they're like, and, you know, this is going to be technical. Like, this is going to be us, like, finding out what you technically, like, know, like, with your actual skills. And I was like, Jesus Christ, I already told you I don't know what happened. What else do you want to know? So I go in, and it's just me and four people. It's four people interviewing me. It's a four-on-one. And they're just going at me, and they're like, and I was working over at cutting sports highlights at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And the workflow that we had over there was ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, we used a program called Camtasia 2, which is something.
What's Camtasia 1?
Exactly. That was the joke they
original.
Made. So. And, like, that's just, like, the joke. Like,
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
No one's fucking heard of it.
Yeah.
So when they're like, you know, describe your past workflows, I'm telling them, well, this current gig that I'm doing, we're using something called Camtasia 2. And immediately one of them starts riffing on me. And they're like, oh, yeah, Camtasia 1 was so great. Is Camtasia 2 just as good? And I was like, nah, it's pretty garbage. And, like, so we were just joking around the whole entire interview about my current job.
Right.
And how horrible the hours are. And, like, because, like, I had to cover live European sports all the time. Oh. So I had to be awake at 3 o'clock in the morning for equestrian games that are going on in France. And so, you know.
He's not joking.
So in the initial interview, when they're telling me, they're like, now, you know, unfortunately, this is a graveyard shift. And, like, I have a giant smile on my face. I'm like, consistently graveyard? Like, it's the same hours every day? And she's like, yeah. I'm like, oh, that's great. At least it's a fucking time schedule I could get used to.
Right.
Because, you know, I would have days where it was like I'm working from 2 a.m. to 2 p.m. Then the next day I'm working from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. And it's just like,
ugh.
It's like you literally can't get used to it.
Right.
And I was just looking for anything that was stable. And, you know, PhotoCam would have been nice. But I guess, you know, after the technical interview, they're like, you know what? His skills aren't exactly where he needs to be. But I was like, you know what? This is good. And I realized that, you know, after that experience that it's, you know, never don't apply. You should always be applying to every job that you have or not every job that you don't have.
Right.
Like if you like where you are, fine. You know, you don't need to apply if you know that you're stable there. You know that you're going to be there for a while. That's fine. Don't apply. But if you're not happy where you are, you should be applying to all the big boys. Like everything that you think is out of your league, apply there. Because you never know. Maybe they'll call you 6 months later saying, you know, we never do this. We never look through the application pile, but, you know, your name popped up and, you know, your English seems pretty good. Why don't you come in? Because with a name like Nadav Itzkowitz, it's 50-50 whether or not I have strong English.
So, yeah, that's true.
I'm here to edit.
I'm here to edit. Where is machine? You work not good, Avid.
And I know that. I know this is kind of...
I caught USSR.
I know this is kind of being dishonest, but in your case, since you do have an interesting name, would you ever put Josh Itzkowitz down on a resume?
Oh, geez, that's such a great question. You know, I've actually never thought about having a different... Because I've seen all these YouTube names of, like, all these, like, immigrants with, like, Latino names being like, yeah, you know, like, I was submitting my application 100, you know, 100 times a day as Jose Alvarez, and now I changed it to Joe Conseco. I changed it to Joe Smith, and now, like, I got a job within a week of applying. And it's like,
that's so the opposite of the area that I work in.
Well, great for me is that Jewish names don't really scare people in this industry.
Of course.
So, you know, the Nadav people are like, oh, where's that from? But then they hear Itzkowitz and they're like, got it, Jewish.
Right. Well, there's a book. It basically talks about statistics and how just by changing your name, let's say, for example, you had, I don't know, like, Anfernee. Let's say Anfernee. I don't know. Just like something that is applied to, you know, stereotypically African American.
Right.
If you change that to Anthony, there's an increase in how many applicants or how many interviews you actually receive.
Yeah,
over
it's super
the,
fucked up.
Which, which is interesting because if, you know, let's say you did change it on your resume to Josh, I wonder how many different
interviews you would get. I don't think it's the Nadav part that gets me the call. I think it's the call.
Well, okay, how about, you know, Nadav Smith? I mean, that's a weird name in general, but I'm wondering what it would, what would change.
But yeah, I mean, that's an interesting question. Like, I've never thought about changing my name. I mean, when I was thinking about going into stand-up comedy, I was like, there's no way I could fucking go up on stage with Nadav Itzkowitz.
Mike Birbiglebe.
No one's going to, like... actually, I think I put my name into, like, an entertainment name generator.
Mm-hmm.
And I put in Nadav Itzkowitz, and it spit out Max Cage. Which I was kind of playing around. I was like, this is kind of cool.
That is pretty kind of cool.
It's kind of badass. I could fuck with that name.
Nadav, thank you for being on the show. We actually, our normal guest, or our normal host, isn't here today.
Oh, that asshole that shares my namesake?
Yeah, but he called in.
Oh. Okay,
and
maybe he's not so bad after all,
guys. Yeah, I haven't listened to any of these.
Had some questions? Is that
he had some questions that he called in. So without further ado, I'll play the first one.
I hope they're good questions.
Yeah, me too.
Mm. Early call time. It's Nadav. Well, sorry I couldn't make it there today, but whatever guest some assistant editor you guys have coming in, I guess I got a couple questions. So early call time guest, what made you want to be an assistant editor? As an editor, what you want to be? Do you want to be other things? What do you want to be?
That's a good question, because I was going to say, where do you want to go in your career?
Well, I just want to be a career assistant editor, you know? I just love dealing with non-creative stuff all the time, because I'm not creative. No,
that's a lie.
No, I think Judd Apatow said this, and I feel scummy for stealing it from him, but actually,
Giving him credit.
Yeah, good.
It's fine.
Yeah.
I actually also said this in the Photochem interview. They're like, so you know, you're applying to be an assistant editor. What do you want to be? I was like, I just want to make movies with my friends. Like, I just want to be able to do that and not worry about bills. And like, that's a good time to me.
Yeah.
So that's all I want to do. I just want to make movies with my friends. If I'm just doing the editing, fine. If I'm doing writing, fine. If I'm, you know, the trumpet player number three on stage, fine. You know. Right. Like, I just want to have a fun time with my friends. I want to be on set with them. I want to show, like, nothing. So quick. Nothing makes me happier than, like, I just recently started shooting sketches with my friends. And nothing makes me happier than working with them all day. And then within like a 12 to 24 hour period, I have a rough cut sent out to everyone that was working on it. And
it's fun.
Seeing their reaction, if I play my cards right, I'm able to be in the same room when they're watching it for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even watch the screen. I just watch my friend's face, because watching people react to something I made, like with the timing, and seeing them laugh at something that I made, it just brings such joy to my heart, you know? Like, if I'm able to make someone laugh, it's like, oh, I just made their day just, you know, one laugh better.
Yeah.
Because I just feel like laughing is the most important thing. And
it's a great answer.
Yeah. So, you know, I just want to make movies with my friends and, you know, make them laugh.
Fair enough.
People laugh. And what would I be doing? Yeah.
Yeah, what would you do?
There's
nothing wrong with being a full-time life assistant.
You know what? This is
by the way.
I definitely don't want to do that.
No, I'm just saying for those people that are out there that maybe don't want to do creative stuff, but they like the technical stuff. Like, I've thought about doing it myself.
Well, for a while, people were like, okay, so whose career path do you most want, like, to replicate? And at first, I thought, you know, I want to be like Judd Apatow.
Mm-hmm.
But then it looks like Judd Apatow doesn't get in on all the fun. Like, it looks like all Judd does is watch his wife get fucked by other dudes in his movies. And I'm like, that's cool and everything. Like, that'd make me laugh. Like, if I was Jed, I was like, making her really uncomfortable. But, like, it doesn't look like he gets in on all as much of the fun as everyone else does.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I was like, do I want to be, like, Seth Rogen? Like, is Seth Rogen who I want to be?
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I feel like it's, like, he's kind of missing out on, like, a key ass. Like, I know that he writes it. I don't think he directs. Like,
I think he co-directed The Interview.
Yeah.
I think. I know he co-directed something.
And so I think I realized the career path that I really like most is probably Louis C.K., who
He
edits his own stuff.
I used to say that I'm, you know, Bette Midlering this. And, like, say, like, oh, yeah, writing, directing, acting, editing, like, fucking all of it. I'm doing all of it. And, but that's not really... No one really gets that reference anymore.
Right.
Honestly, I'm too young to really understand that reference. I just heard it on TV one time. So, right now, I think Louis C.K. is probably who I'd want to be most like is, you know, I get to write my own shit. Sure, I'm taking less money, but because of that, I get more creative control.
Mm-hmm.
I get to decide who's in my show. I get to edit it exactly the way that I want. I get to direct it. I get to act in it. And, like, you know, like, mm-hmm. I was listening to the Doug Stanhope podcast, and he was talking about when he was on Louis. And Doug Stanhope was like, you know, I really hate working as an actor in any show because, you know, the director who doesn't know you comes up to you and he's like, you know, that was great. But, you know, on the next take, like, that was perfect. That was perfect. Let's do one more. This time, let's change it so that, you know, just be more funny. Be more funny. And it's like, he's like, you know, these directors just don't know how to talk to me. And he's like, and then mm-hmm. when I went on Louis, like, I did something and Louis just came, he's like, cut. Doug, that was dog shit. No, don't do it like that. Do it exactly like this. And then he showed him exactly how to do it. He's like, that was perfect. And it's like, the reason he was able to talk to him like that is because they're friends. And friends know how to talk to each other. And like, you could give the hardest advice to your friend. Like, you could say the meanest shit to your friend. And as long as they know it's coming from a good place, if they're a good friend, they won't be mad at you.
Well, and being able to say, oh, do it exactly like this, a lot of directors would say that's a no-no.
Oh, yeah?
Because you're not you're supposed to let the actor act.
Uh-huh.
But
fuck that. But if they're not doing it the way that it was envisioned by the person who's wrote it, directed it, unless they're bringing something new to the table. I mean, like, because, I mean, I just, I filmed something, today is Sunday, filmed something on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Wrote this sketch like 3 or 4 years ago, sat on the script forever. Mm-hmm. It's pretty much like a 3-page dick and fart joke. And like, we come in and like, you know, I printed out the script for everybody. It's 4 people on set. It's me, the 2 other actors, and Brian. Actually, you know what? Everyone who worked on it was a guest on Early Call Time.
Yeah.
So Aviv was acting in it. Brian was DPing it and Jordan was acting in it.
It's funny.
And so, you know, when they all came in, everyone was like, hey, you know, I had an issue with this part of the script. Like, I'm not someone that's like, hey, I wrote this in fucking stone. None of this is changing. It's like, no, like,
it's collaborative.
If someone has an idea that's better than your idea, it doesn't matter where it comes from. If it's objectively better than your idea, then it's better. And
right.
By doing it, it'll make your thing better.
Sure. And it makes total sense.
Exactly.
Should we get to the other questions?
Was that only the first question?
Yeah.
Oh, I hope the other questions are just as good
as this
one.
He sent in some more.
Here's a second question.
Excited to hear this.
Early call time. It's Nadav again.
Oh.
Got another question for your guest. He's Jewish, right? So when you make your schnitzel, do you do flour, egg, breadcrumbs? Or do you do flour, egg, breadcrumbs?
Hmm.
Really like to know what you do. Thanks, guys.
That's an interesting question there.
I love schnitzel, by the way.
I love your mother's schnitzel.
Schnitzel.
Wow.
Schnitzel is fried chicken.
What?
Oh, it's
It's food.
Oh.
Bro.
Okay.
Andrew, get your head out of the gutter.
I didn't.
So schnitzel is fried food. It's fried chicken.
It's delicious.
It goes really well with mashed potatoes.
Yeah, it does.
And so... You know, I've had this discussion with people before, and they're like, what is the best, you know, recipe for schnitzel?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is flour, egg, breadcrumbs into the frying pan. If you get too many layers going on, that outer layer is just going to completely come off, and you're just going to have, like, a white piece of, like, breast meat.
Right.
Yeah,
so you need to do it as a few layers as possible so it actually sticks to the chicken.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you make sure.
Is this like when I used to make mozzarella sticks, and you do the same thing?
I didn't see your I've never had your mozzarella sticks.
No, but it was the same. I don't know if it's the same thing or not. It's basically flour, egg, and then breadcrumbs, and you fry it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Wow.
But, yep. Great. But they need to be frozen, right? So that they don't melt into the...
No, I used just fresh mozzarella. Well, I mean, refrigerated.
I thought you needed to, like, keep it frozen so that it wouldn't just ooze out of all the breadcrumbs.
I don't think I've ever done... Because when I worked at a restaurant, I would make mozzarella sticks. No, that wasn't frozen. It was just refrigerator.
And this has been Eating with Early Call Time.
This is key to assistant editor.
We have a third. We have a third question.
Okay, here we go.
Here's the last one.
Hey, Early Call Time. Nadav again.
Oh, it's
so,
you.
Last question for your guest. If they had $1 million, how would they spend that $1 million?
Who is they?
Have fun answering. Later, guys.
I assume that Nadav was referring to Nadav.
Yeah.
Oh, if you had $1 million.
I don't think if Nadav knew I was going to be a boy or girl, I think all he knew was that I was going to be an assistant editor.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he was just trying to keep the pronouns.
Sure. Would you make a lot of schnitzel? I would.
Damn, with $1 million, what would I do? Well, first thing I would do is probably fund all of my stupid ideas that I've been sitting in the back of my head for a long time.
Right.
But it's like, you know, if you have $1 million, could someone live off $1 million for their entire life?
If you invest it correctly, yeah.
Okay.
If you're just spending it, I think you'd have to be careful.
I feel like if you're not investing, like, and you're just spending whatever, I feel like 10 years, if you're super reckless.
Well, I would say if you're super reckless, I can guarantee you 6 months.
A day. You could blow that in a day.
Yeah. I have a family member that, sort of family member, blow $1 million in 6 months. It was an inheritance.
Oh, man.
Yeah, he was a retard.
I'm not even mad. That's impressive.
I guess. But anyway.
So $1 million, what would I do? Well, what I would probably try and do is fund a whole bunch of short films and get my friends to work on them so I could, you know, prematurely make my dream come true and make movies with my friends.
You wouldn't make a feature?
You could do it with $1 million.
The thing is with a feature, this is your one thing. But if you got short films,
that's what I think.
You can make 5 crappy ones and 3 good ones or whatever.
Yeah, I think what I would do is probably just do a whole bunch of shorts because I don't want to blow my entire load on one feature that ends up being bad, you know?
Sure.
I'd rather take my chance. You know, it's a number.
You don't want to make a Gone Girl. I understand.
Exactly. I don't want to make
a fucking three-hour
Gone Girl. And you know what else? Oh, God. There was like 5 natural endings in that fucking movie. I was just waiting for the credits to roll and it's just like, nope, guess what? Here's fucking part 3 of this fucking... Lifetime for Women movie marathon.
So good.
So dumb. So yeah, that's what I would do.
Cool. Well, Nadav, thank you for being on the podcast today.
Guys, thanks for having me.
Are you able to, what if people want to give you work? Can they contact you?
Sure. They could go on my website, earlycalltime.com.
They could have that too.
They could tweet me at earlycalltime or like me on Facebook at earlycalltime.
Perfect.
But no, you know what? If people want to reach me, I mean, I don't think
just
anybody...
contact us through the website. We'll get in contact
with
we'll
pass
along
the information to
you. Yeah, you know what? Just write, but don't comment on the website because most of those are Russian spammers, so we just delete all those most of the time. So what you should do? You should email us earlycalltime@gmail.com.
There you go.
We read those. So if you want to get into contact with me or really anyone on here, just
email us.
Hang out at the email address.
Hang out with us on the internet.
Is this the part where I tell someone
to listen to the outro?
If someone, I already gave advice, right?
Yeah,
you did.
Oh, okay,
we gave quite a bit of advice.
We gave like
too much, I would wager. I think people are confused.
Okay, well, with that, guys, I guess. I mean, what do you guys? You guys usually say something like, "Listen to the outro."
Listen to the outro.
And that's a wrap. Didn't get your fill at Craft Services and you want more? Check out earlycalltime.com for more podcasts and information pertaining to the ever-growing entertainment industry. And remember to tell your friends about us via Facebook and Twitter. Thanks for listening.